Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Definitive Wrap, where we report the truth about the world around us. We stand for true conservative principles and against wokeness. The Definitive Wrap, where we respect people of faith, the men and women in uniform who serve with pride, and our support for Israel. And now, your hosts, Bela Sebro, she's the nice one, and Alan Skorsky, he's not so nice. But together, they are The Definitive Wrap.
Thank you, Mr. Producer, and happy Wednesday, Israel News Talk Radio. We hope you're all having a great week. You know, Bela, as you know, I have been working on trying to get today's guest for over 2 months, probably even longer. And today we finally have her. But since I have limited time, I can only tease the audience for so long. So I'm going to begin with the slight introduction and let you take over. There's a saying in politics, when something doesn't make sense or look right, follow the money. In movies, if you want excitement, we think of James Bond or Fauda. Today's guest is the James Bond and Fauda of the courtroom. Nitzana Darshan Leitner is the CEO of the Shurat Hadin Law Center, who follows the money and sues governments who finance terrorism against Israelis and Jews and banks who launder money for terrorist groups. Bela, have I teased enough? Now it's your turn.
Alan, today's guest is actually better than a James Bond or Fauda. This courageous, brave woman who formed Shurat Hadin stops terrorism not with knives, guns, or explosives. Nitzana Darshan Leitner stops terrorism in the pocket. She hits the enemy in the pocket in her cool, calm, collected, professional manner. How does she do that? Well, Nitzana bankrupts terrorism one lawsuit at a time. Absolutely brilliant. She sues the terrorists. Imagine that. And not just in Israel, she sues them in U.S. courtrooms too, especially when a victim holds a U.S. citizenship. Nitzana also gets tip-offs about the finances of the terrorists because one can say, hey, how does she know how much money they got? And in what banks? She finds out she has the right people, the right connections. This is unbelievable and one heck of a fascinating show. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. And it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
Welcome back to The Definitive Wrap with Alan Skorsky and Bela Sebro.
Welcome back, Israel News Talk Radio. During my intro, I gave a brief tease about today's guest from Shurat Hadin Law Center. So now I'll continue with my opening monologue. On their website, their motto is bankrupting terrorism one lawsuit at a time. We undertake civil actions against Hamas, Islamic Jihad, the PLO, the Palestinian Authority, Hezbollah, Iran, Syria, Egypt, North Korea, UBS, and the Lebanese Canadian Bank. The cases being tried in Israeli, American, Canadian, and European jurisdictions allow the victims of terrorism to fight back. Shurat Hadin has won billions of dollars in judgments against these groups. In her fantastic book titled Harpoon, Inside the Covert War Against Terrorism's Money Masters, Nitzana gives vivid details about how the Mossad, led by Meir Dagan, were able to trace the funds used by terror groups like Hezbollah and the brilliant executions of these operations. Today, we will discuss these and other major cases taken on by Shurat Hadin. Bela?
Thank you, Alan. Today's guest represents an organization that follows the verse in the Torah, Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof Laman Tichyeh, justice, justice shall you pursue so that you may live. Shurat HaDin goes on the legal offensive against Israel's enemies, and it's with tremendous wisdom that they accomplish their missions, but not with guns and knives and bombs. No, they cut off the source of their supply of money. And how do they do that? They sue them. In recent news, anti-Israel rapper Tamer Nafar, who spread anti-Israel messages, including comparing Israel to Nazis, was removed from government campaign after Shurat HaDin went to task demanding that he be removed on the basis that he is committing a civil injustice. And even more recent, it was Shurat HaDin, Israeli law center, that got a court order for Hamas to compensate families of three murdered teens. There is no end to what Shurat HaDin will do, as their slogan is bankrupting terrorism, one lost thought at a time. And with us today to talk about their successful cases is a heroic, courageous professional, Nitzana Darshan Leitner, the CEO of the Shurat HaDin Law Center. She's an Israeli attorney, human rights activist, and the founder of Shurat HaDin Israeli Law Center. Nitzana has represented hundreds of terror victims and recovered more than $200 million in compensation on their behalf, among her many other accomplishments. Nitzana, it gives me great honor to welcome you to the Definitive Wrap.
Well, thank you, Bella. It's my pleasure, honor to be on your show.
Nitzana, please and share with our audience how Shurat HaDin was started. We want to know how this organization is so successful being tough but diplomatic. I love that.
Yeah. You know, it's a nonviolent way to fight terrorism. This is how I recognized it. Shurat HaDin was established in the beginning of Intifada. We actually started as private lawyers and just finishing up law school, and we realized that there is a way to fight terrorism by going after their pocketbooks, after the terror organizations, after their assets,
yeah, hit them
after
in the pocket, money. That's it.
Right? Because in the end, money is oxygen to everything, including terrorism. And if we chop off the flow of the money, we can chop off the flow of the terrorism. We started filing lawsuits against Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Palestinian Authority, against Iran and Syria in the United States. And then we were approached by a secret unit in the Mossad called Harpoon. This is a unit that combines with all representatives from all the security services and intelligence services in Israel, but they have one goal: to fight terror financing. It was headed by Meir Dagan, the legendary head of the Mossad. And they saw the same thing that we saw: go after the money, kill the money. Their name was Harpoon. It was a secret unit until we wrote a book about it. And they approached us and say, maybe we can collaborate, we can work together. They will give us evidence to go after banks to provide financial services to organizations. And we agreed. We established Shurat HaDin, a non-profit organization, to manage all these hundreds of cases in orderly manner in the courts around the world.
Okay, so Nitzana, I wrote down my questions for you for today, and I'm going to begin with Harpoon because you mentioned it. It is a fantastic book. It is, again, James Bond and Fauda, but it's real. So I'm going to just mention two points from the book that stuck with me, and you can either expand on it or, you know, add anything you like. First, it was Operation Green Lantern, and this was the height of chutzpah, but good chutzpah, where Israel's secret service and all their elite agencies went into Ramallah. They cordoned off a bank. They raided the bank. They took out all of their computers, and the Bush administration went nuts. I mean, this was magnificent. And then my favorite story that I was laughing. You referred to a...
They said to Ariel Sharon, President Bush told Ariel Sharon that no democratic state goes and rob a bank.
it was beautiful operation. And you know what? Bush got over it. But my favorite story is the one about Salah Ezzedine. He was a Shiite Muslim from Lebanon. Bela, this is a great story. He was a very well-to-do investor. He was very close to Hezbollah. And everybody wanted to invest with him. You know, if he's living rich, why shouldn't we? So the way they do it in the Middle East is they travel to the Gulf states, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and they meet up with other investors. And an Israeli unit hooked up with him and said, you know, we're investors, we can make you a lot of money. So this Muslim supporter of Hezbollah would invest money with this new investment firm, and he would get supporters of Hezbollah to invest with him. And then soon other Arabs in Lebanon, other Shiites would invest with him, and they would get returns of 40, 50, 60%. And then one day, poof, the investment firm disappeared. And they realized that they were set up. So Nitzan, I don't know if you want to talk about this in more detail. I don't know if you can, but this is one of my favorite parts of your book.
Yeah, that surprised us as well. We had a front seat watching the operations of Harpoon. And although we enjoy the fruits of Green Lantern operation, all the documentations that the Harpoon grabbed from the robbing the bank and raiding the bank fell into our hands, and we used it in legal proceedings against banks that help in animated terrorism. We saw how they did the same thing with the Lebanese Madoff. That's the guy in Lebanon. They just simply tricked him and got him to invest with him and made the money disappear. The same story was with Yasser Arafat when they created, again, a fake investment fund and convinced Mohammed Rashid, who was the financial advisor of Yasser Arafat, to go and just know the new investment fund. They actually rented buildings and furnitures and hired beautiful secretaries and made a whole show, great operation from Mossad. Eventually, Mohammed Rashid agreed, invested all the money, and after a couple of months, lost it somewhere in the air. This is the brilliance of Meir Dagan and his staff. He chose the right people to go and brainstorm and to come up with these ideas. The Meir Dagan, although he was a big hero, and he had a dagger between his teeth, this is how it was described by Ariel Sharon, the prime minister, hated wars. He could not have people die in the wars. He could not have his soldiers die in the war. And he was thinking creatively, what would be a nonviolent way to fight terrorism? And this is what he came up with, Harpoon.
Yeah. Nitzana, I understand that many of the cases are heard in U.S. courtrooms, either because victims of Palestinian shootings and bombings are Americans, and then with regards to the attacks or Hezbollah rockets, and many of them do hold American citizenship. But my question is, a lot of these terrorists do have militant funds in the United States, and you target those militant funds. So in your book, Harpoon, you describe how those bank accounts are targeted. So my question is, I'm very curious, where do you get your tip-offs about their finances? Like, how do you know that? Like, where do you find out?
No, I just told you my secret.
I've always been wondering about that.
I told you my secret. It started with Harpoon. They, as a Mossad unit or as a intelligence unit that target terror financing, they went themselves and realized that millions and millions of dollars are making their way from Europe, from United States, into the hands of the Palestinian organizations, and they track the money. Their slogan was follow the money, target the money, yeah, kill the money. They had the information, and they found ways to whitewash this evidence, this information, and let us use it in court. Sometimes it was simply documents that they target. Sometimes it was testimonials of Mossad agents that literally went to the banks, warned them before that they are helping adding and abetting their organizations, and even told them, you know, that in the end they might find themselves in court being sued by terror victims. Sometimes this warning put an end to the accounts that this bank held. Sometimes it did not, and the bank found themselves in the bench in court being sued by derivatives for hundreds of millions of dollars.
Itzana, the music is coming on. After the break, I'm going to ask you about Ben & Jerry's and your plans to go after the Ben & Jerry's trademark in Israel. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Itzana Darshan-Leitner.
Hi everyone, this is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to The Definitive Wrap with Alan Skorsky and Bela Sebro.
Thank you, Mr. Producer, and welcome back, Israel News Talk Radio, to our second segment with special guest Itzana Darshan-Leitner. Itzana, I want to bring up a recent case, Ben & Jerry's. It was very big news here, and then it kind of faded away. There are boycotts. And then you said, you know what? If you're going to boycott Israel, then we're just going to go after your trademark. Now, there's something else I want to bring up. I don't know if you saw this because it just went viral. Ben and Jerry just sat down for an interview and they were asked, okay, so you're boycotting parts of Israel and you're proud Jews, blah, blah, blah. But you're doing this out of principle. So let me ask you, the interviewer says, if you're acting on principle, then why are you selling to Texas and Georgia, where, you know, they're anti-abortion, they're pro-voting, and they just sat there like a couple of idiots. Now, here's my question. In Israel, you have Palestinian Media Watch, Itamar Marcus, who has everything. I would, and I was going to do this, I just didn't do it. I would love to tell, go to Unilever and say, okay, you're principled people. Here is everything that we have in the Palestinian Authority. They have said they consider all of Israel occupied Palestine, but you support them. We have thousands of videos of children in kindergarten singing about the gloriousness of becoming martyrs. This is who you're, and there's a whole list. And not once, because Itamar always says when he goes to Europe or he goes to the U.S. Congress and he shows them the information, they're all, you know, aghast. Why is this information never used to confront people like them or Unilever? Unilever would be more embarrassed. Ben and Jerry's, they're probably, they have no shame because they're always smoking pot. But certainly against a company like Unilever, this would certainly shame them.
Right. So we put this information in front of Unilever. We told them about this hypocrisy. We emphasize that, first of all, whereas Ben & Jerry's boycotts Judean Samaria because it's so-called occupied territories, they don't boycott Tibet or Northern Cyprus or Georgia, which are also considered to be occupied countries. Where is their answer for this? How can they choose to go against the Jews and not against the Indians or the Turkish or the Kurds in other countries? Isn't it pure anti-Semitism? Unilever's answer was not, we are not anti-Semites. But you touch upon a very great point, and this is what Turatadin did on this matter as well. The Palestinian Authority violates human rights consistently on a daily basis. They use these children as human shields. They use them as soldiers. They use them to go on the fence. They use them, they train them. They give them weapons. They teach them how to kill just in 3 years old, 5 years old teenagers, really, really young. Not only that, they violate women's rights. They violate animal rights. They violate LGBT rights. What about all that? Sharadadin came up with reports and we spread it all over the world documenting how the Palestinian Authority violates this right. But if you really ask for a sincere answer and you bring this up with Ben and Jerry's, you will find the same answer, the same bland surprise as they did in the interview? That's a very interesting question. Let me think about it.
Nitzana, I understand that Shirat Hadin defends against war crime allegations. Can you tell us about that, please? It's been making the news headlines.
Yeah, the Palestinian Authority found a new era that they can fight Israel on, which is the International Criminal Court. Indicting Israel for war crimes, indicting IDF soldiers for war crimes. Their allegations are mainly two. One is the IDF soldiers are using excessive force against the Palestinians in their different operations. And the other one is the settlements, which is a breach of international law. Israel cannot build houses in occupied territories. Israel is not a member in the court. They are not going to participate in this proceeding. Israel will not defend itself before the International Criminal Court for the simple reason that Israel knows it's a mock court, it's a political court. There is no intention to really dive into this issue and fairly judge Israel or the Palestinian Authority. We already see it from their decision to go into this conflict, which they lack any jurisdiction. Palestinian Authority is not a state. Israel is not a member. They have zero jurisdiction to go in. And yet, they decided to take this investigation and run with it. So, yet, there is a need to represent Israel's cause in the court. And this is where Shirat Hadin comes in. We are coming on behalf of victims, two kinds of victims. One is the terror victims. We come and allege that the Palestinian Authority is actually inciting to terrorism. They have the policy of pay to slay, where they pay awards for committing acts of terrorism against innocent people. They pay them money. They pay stipends to the families of the suicide bombers. They are endorsing terrorism, which is a violation of international law.
Right.
And the other type of victims are those who was living in Judean Samaria, in the Gush Etzion area, in the old city, prior to 1948, were departed from their houses, expelled from their houses when Jordan took over this part of Israel, the territories, the West Bank, and came back after 67 when Israel took over control again. These victims, their rights will be violated if the court will rule that their houses actually belong to a Palestinian state or part of the Palestinian state. Being representing victims, we have a right to take part in the legal proceedings in the court. And we're waiting for the new prosecutor that just took, went into office a couple of months ago to decide whether he continues with this fruitless investigation, which really has zero basis to continue.
Now, Nitzana, I read that you are going after Facebook and other social media for allowing their platforms to be used for hate speech. So I remember a few years ago, I don't know if it was you, but it was an organization in Israel who posted an anti-Israel and an anti-Palestinian cartoon. It was duplicate. It was you?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, it was side by side, the exact same thing.
It was two pages, one calls to call to kill Palestinians, one call to kill Israelis. We posted the exact same phrases, the exact same images, just with one difference, one's against Israelis, the other one against Palestinians. And then we asked Facebook to take down both pages. Facebook immediately took down the pages that called to kill Palestinians. They sent us a fair message saying that this page violates their community standards.
Of course.
But they left the Israeli page standing, saying that the page does not violate their community standards.
Yeah. Okay.
Nitzana, it's very disturbing how social media platforms seem to be, it almost seems as though they're on the side of terrorists, where they allow anti-Israel remarks. But yet, if anything is said with regards to anti-terrorism, people get thrown off. So my question is, how do you litigate with social media platforms for not deleting accounts of terrorists? And what is it that you can do or are doing to make sure that everything is fair? You know, people, if people want to talk, then everybody can talk. Or if one has to be quiet, the other one has to be quiet.
Yeah. We file lawsuits against Facebook, against Twitter, and against Google in the federal courts in the United States. The basis for this lawsuit is a law in the United States named Anti-Terrorism Act. This law prohibits any American citizen or American company provide any sort of services to designated organization. In the United States, you are not allowed to provide services or to provide material support to a designated organization. You will carry criminal and civil liability. And this is what we did. We filed a $1 billion lawsuit against Facebook, against Twitter, against Google. The problem is that these social media companies have a defense. It comes in the frame of form of the Communication Decency Act. This is section 230 to the CDA. And this law says that social media services would be immune from anything that their users are posting on their platform. Anybody can put anything they want on Facebook, tweet on Twitter, put any video in YouTube, and these giants will be immune. So when we come and bring our cases, usually they're being rejected, dismissed, just based on this Communication Decency Act. Recently, I was very excited to get a ruling in the Court of Appeal in a case against Google. This is a case on behalf of a young girl that was killed in a Paris attack done by ISIS. Right. We sue Google because Google owns YouTube, and between you and I, ISIS would not be even known, recognized without YouTube.
Nitzana, we're coming up on a hard break. We'll be right back with our last segment right after these messages.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We're back with Alan and Bela on the Definitive Rap Radio Show.
Welcome back, Israel News Talk Radio. Nitzana, right before the break, you were talking about your suit against Big Tech and YouTube for giving a platform to groups like ISIS. Please continue.
We sued them, and in the Court of Appeal, we finally had the minority opinion on our side saying that indeed, Google could not be, or YouTube could not be considered as a bulletin board, as they claim. They cannot be immune because, as you mentioned, they pick up what words, what videos to screen and what's not.
Correct.
They ban Dennis Prager. They ban conservative speech, conservative videos, whereas they let others to go and even to incite to violence, which is really insane. So this judge said, with all due respect, the law from 1996, there's no valid anymore. It doesn't make sense. If in 1996, the Congress want to protect the social media giants, today they don't have to do that because the social media giants prove that they can actually monitor this speech. They delete if they want or not delete if they don't want. they have the algorithm to monitor incitement to terrorism. Why should they be immune now? We are 25 years after. And the other judge that did not rule in favor of us did mention that it's time to change the Communication Decency Act. So now finally we have a way, we have a path. We're going to file a motion for a rehearing before larger court. And perhaps for the first time, we'll be able to crack this defense.
Sana, one of your recent cases was you represented the families of Naftali Frankel, Gilad Shair, and Eyal Yifrach, who were murdered by Hamas in 2014. And I read with shock that the Jerusalem judge ordered Hamas to pay each family basically the equivalent of about $1 million. Now, again, every state, every country has different, you know, limits for how much they award. Here in America, George Floyd was killed by a police officer in Minnesota, and his family was awarded $27 million. Here, three boys were kidnapped and murdered by Hamas terrorists who actually planned to kill these boys. And yet they walk away with less than $1 million. I hear nightmare stories about Israeli courts and the Supreme Court, which, you know, sometimes shock my senses. Can you give us any information about that case?
It was, first of all, it was a terrible story. As we all remember, three young kids were kidnapped by two Hamas terrorists, and we shot them right when they entered the car, and then hide them in an area near Hebron, and an entire state held its breath for 18 days looking for the boys until they found the bodies. Because of this kidnap, Israel went into protective edge operation, taking a revenge from Hamas and trying to shut down their terrorists. We filed a lawsuit on their behalf against Hamas, and we expected to receive a similar judgment that we received in the United States. Not in terms of money awards, because we understand, you know, United States has a different scale when they give compensation. You mentioned George Floyd, he got $27 million. I don't think in Israel he would get perhaps maybe $1 million. However, when it comes to terror victim litigation, to terror cases, the United States court grants hundreds of millions of dollars compensations, not because it's typical, just because they want to show their outrage. They want to show how unacceptable it is to come and kill innocent people in act of terrorism. They want to show how disgusted they are from this act. So the note only gives compensatory damages, which is very, very high, tens of millions of dollars. They only also grant punitive damages. And thus you have a large amount of money to quit. We try to teach the Israeli court about what's going on in the United States. And we felt that Israel, being after so many terror attacks, suffering for decades from brutal acts of terrorism, would follow the same path, would show Hamas, the Palestinian Authority, Islamic Jihad, that there is a price, that Jewish blood is not cheap. And they disappointed us. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court came down with a decision, not in our case, in a previous case, giving a different tag of price to people that were killed in terror attacks. And as you mentioned, it comes to less than $1 million per family. This is really disappointing. We are going to appeal this judgment, bring it up before the Supreme Court once again to think maybe they can change their mind. The only court that can change the Supreme Court's ruling is the Supreme Court itself. And we are going to appeal the district court decision, because in the end, there must be a say, there must be a statement, you must know, the terror organizations must realize that 75 years after the Holocaust, there is a price to Jewish blood. You cannot kill Jews and go without pay. And with all due respect, $1 million doesn't do anything to Hamas or to the Palestinian Authority, which their budget is $1 billion a year. You want to hurt them, you want to hit them, you want to teach them, you want to tell them not to do it again, give them significant amount that they will.
Nitzana, you have been doing so much and are continuing to do in your unique, wise way. But what would you say is your greatest achievement with regard to a case?
I think my greatest achievement, I have several, but I really like the one that we won against the Palestinian Authority in the United States. In 2004, we filed a lawsuit on behalf of 10 families of terror victims. And the case went to discovery, deposition, motion to dismiss. And after 11 years, it finally went to trial. 2015 opened in New York. And we were there. We participated in the trial, 50 days. It was the coldest months of my life in New York. And the common basis for this terror attacks were that they all were perpetrated and done by Palestinian employees, Palestinian people that received salary from the Palestinian Authority, policemen, security guards, other stuff, but they're all under the jurisdiction of the authority of the Palestinian Authority. So the Palestinian Authority came and had a defense. They said, indeed, they were our employees, but they were rogue employees. They did the attacks after work hours. It wasn't our policy to kill Israelis. We didn't encourage them to kill Jews. But when the trial opened, they could not explain the jury. If they were rogue employees, how do you continue paying their salary in the jail until today?
Yeah.
How do you raise them in rank every 3 years? How to pay stipends to the families of the suicide bombers? This is not how you treat rogue employees. This is not when your policy is against killing Jews. When the jury went and came back, they found the Palestinian Authority responsible for all acts of terrorism and gave us a judgment for $655 million.
Wow.
That was a great achievement.
What an achievement. Wow.
Yeah. Nitzana?
Unfortunately, the story didn't end. Yeah. The Palestinian Authority filed an appeal. They were able to vacate the judgment based on personal jurisdiction. They said, with all due respect, United States has no jurisdiction over us. We don't work in the United States. We don't represent in the United States. We don't have business in the United States. And the courts of appeal agreed with them. The State Department also agreed with them. And when we filed our motion to the Supreme Court, the judgment was still vacated. However, we went to Congress and told them that there is a problem. There is a problem because we litigated this case for 15 years based on a law that they enacted, the Anti-Terrorism Act, that allows American citizens to bring their cases in the United States for terror attacks that happened outside of the United States. It's an extraterritorial jurisdiction law. On the other hand, the Supreme Court found this law to be unconstitutional. So they have to fix the problem. And their way to fix the problem is to reinstate personal jurisdiction, to come and say if the United States wants to continue to receive aid from if the Palestinian Authority wants to continue and receive aid from the Palestinian Authority, they have to agree to their personal jurisdiction.
Okay.
So now we're back in the district court, trying to find out whether there is jurisdiction based on this new law. I really hope that in the end of the day, the Palestinian Authority will have to pay $655 million to the terror victims. But I already know that the Palestinian Authority leaders could not imagine how the little money they gave the terrorists before the attacks, how the support they provided them before the attacks, turn in the end of the day to hundreds of millions of dollars in damages against.
Nisana, on behalf of Alan and myself, we want to thank you for joining us today and all the work you and Shorat Hadin do on behalf of Jewish victims of terrorism all over the globe. As always, we want to thank Israel News Talk Radio and our audience for tuning into our shows. Please tell your friends to tune in every Wednesday for the Definitive Rap Radio Show at 4 p.m. Israel time and 9 a.m. Eastern time in North America. If you missed any part of today's interview, you can always go into our archives for this and any of our previous shows. Wish you all of you a great rest of the week.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom! Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.